Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
We're joined now by John Traynor, who is Chief Executive of the Sponsorship and Marketing Consultancy Onside. John, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Gavin.
Sponsorship and marketing is often an easy cut to make when there's a crisis. Is that what happened during the pandemic?
Certainly there was, a more forensic analysis done on the line item, which is sponsorship. Lots of organizations saw their CFO and CEO get involved in conversations around the impacts of COVID on their sponsorship deals. But our experience will have been that in quite a number of cases, those conversations helped to probably enhance the view of the role of sponsorship in organizations. So, you know, it helped to illustrate a little bit better exactly what is the value and the return. I think on that basis, we've seen in the first half of this year that the amount of deals that have been done are double what was done this time last year in terms of sponsorship deals. Obviously, COVID has had an impact, but yeah. You know, I suppose, you know, if you even look at comparing the same period, which is H1 2019 versus H1 2021, there was an increase of 8% in deals. So a lot of companies have gone into themselves, they've done a forensic analysis, they've challenged sponsorship's role, and I suppose in a lot of cases the outcome of those exercises has been that they see value, and that on that basis, in some cases, it's actually seen a growth in the role of sponsorship in the business.
Yeah, well, I mean, the comparison with H1 2019 is the key figure, really. Now, obviously, there would have been, I suppose, pent-up demand. A lot of events were cancelled, but to be back above 2019 levels is pretty healthy. I mean, you're talking there about the value of sponsorship to the organisation. What is the value of sponsorship to the organisation?
You know, historically, it would have been, you know, I give you 100 euros and you give me back 500 euros worth of media value. And sure, there's a good business case and we're happy with that. It's evolved quite a bit since then. You know, right now it's about, you know, the value that is being delivered on brand equity scores, without getting too technical into it. But, you know, it's essentially a value where you're able to see where the sponsorships are generating outputs, which are creating an outcome. And the outcome is often more consumers are familiar with the brand, they feel more positively disposed towards the brand, they're more likely to consider buying the brand. And in a lot of cases, that flows down into, I'm aware of the brand, I'm more likely to consider it. And there's a proportion who will either switch to that brand or who might actually go, oh, I'm going to stay with this brand because they're sponsoring certain things. And when you do the financial analysis on that and the management of things like churn, where companies are trying to protect losing customers and trying to win new customers, a lot of these business cases are showing multi-million euro returns on the audiences that they're reaching through these sponsorships. So that's much more an outcomes-based business case. Beyond that, there's in a lot of cases, there's commercial outcomes. So there's actually revenue being directly attributable to sponsorships in terms of product sales. So the business case is much more commercial, much more revenue-based rather than media value-based, I suppose.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I mean, let me just pick you up on that last point there. So you said the business case is much more commercial-based than brand value-based. That's what you said there at the end?
Well, certainly there's certainly businesses who are able to trace specific purchases of products directly to a sponsorship and to an involvement with a sponsorship that they wouldn't have been able to fulfill if they didn't have those sponsorships in place. So there are certainly product lines and products that are attributable to the sponsorship involvement.
Yeah, but I have to say I spoke to a chief executive of quite a large company recently, and I was asking him about a particular sponsorship they had done, and I was kind of saying, why did you do it? And you know, I thought it was, well, I want people to see you know, the company's name, and to maybe, you know, they'll think, oh, I need to go and get a service in that area, so I'll go to this company. But his response was much more around, actually, it's to try and create a positive image of the brand to show that we're associated with you know, good things, etc.
Yeah, and unquestionably, that's a step in the process. And there are certainly some businesses and brands who are quite satisfied that if they've ticked the box on, you know, strengthening the level of awareness and familiarity there is around their brand, and having people say, I feel more positive about that brand because they're supporting the GA or rugby or music or whatever it is, job done. But there are certain other businesses who aren't satisfied and certain CFOs who aren't satisfied with that being the complete story. And they do push a couple of steps further into trying to say, well, as a result of those people saying they feel better about me, have they done anything about that? Have they come into my store? Have they, you know, switched their mobile phone to me? Have they switched their electricity supply to me? Are they buying my insurance? You know, there's harder arguments being required and harder cases being required now from companies, and being able to kind of uncover the degree of that is certainly where in the last 12 months we've been certainly being pushed to get as far down to that line of logic as possible.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see that you are uncovering that it can make an impact in that regard. Mm. Does most sponsorship go on sport?
Yeah, certainly, you know, over 8 and 10 of the deals that we picked up in the first half of this year were sport related. So sport definitely commands the lion's share, and it has globally and certainly locally for a large amount of time. That said, I do think there's a bit of a movement and a bit of a trend more into non-sporting platforms as well. So obviously you've got areas like music and entertainment, which you know, some of the biggest sponsors in the country, like you know, the Borgosh Entity Theatre, supporting, you know, venues and arts related types of activities are still out there. But there's also been a big move towards cause related type of activity. And if we were to ask,
what does that mean?
You know, so that's about, you know, seeing the likes of Aldi getting involved with Barnardo's and Food Cloud, you know, Electric Ireland getting involved with Darkness Into Light, with Pieta House. So activity that I suppose is driving a stronger social purpose. There's definitely momentum behind that. And what we pick up on our industry survey at the start of the year was that there's a lot of appetite among brands for platforms in that space, be it cause, community, and in particular in the area of sustainability. So there's been a massive push within the industry for opportunities for businesses to align themselves with sustainability-based initiatives or causes or community.
What type of companies does a sponsorship suit particularly? Because we're kind of used to seeing the bigger companies doing them. You think of the various ones who'd be involved with the GAA, which you mentioned, or whatever. But is it something that SMEs can use as well to good effect, or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think the lineup of sponsors in the next 10 years will definitely look very different to what we've seen in the last 10. You know, it's really effective for consumer facing brands, for FMCG brands, you know, the beer brands, the mobile phone brands, the alcohol brands have all done really well with it historically. But we've definitely, again, seen a big push from B2B type businesses, tech firms, you know, lots of brands who probably aren't even, you know, household names aren't familiar. Certainly globally, they're starting to get involved. And I think there's been a thing driven by COVID, which is a push for more local-based support of local-based assets and local-based property. So yeah. I think there's certainly been a situation where, you know, small to medium-sized firms are starting to support local, you know, sports clubs or support local initiatives. So I think, again, that's likely to escalate, I would say, over the next couple of years as a space where, you know, if you are a rights holder and you have something to sell, you shouldn't be looking at the big brands. You should equally be looking at some of the more local brands around you to see opportunity.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, certainly the research does show that people, ordinary punters, I mean, are sort of more conscious of shopping local during the pandemic. Mm. So hopefully we'd see that stick and we'd see these companies looking to sponsor local causes. Our guest here on News Talk is John Traynor, CEO of Onside, the sponsorship and marketing consultancy. Sponsorship can go wrong, John, of course. I mean, you think of the doping scandals in cycling. I always associate the watch brand Festina with performance-enhancing drugs. If you remember, the team named after Festina had a big drugs bust, so it can go wrong. I want to ask you, though, about the Olympics, which is obviously a big sponsorship event, and it's turned out to be a bit of a farce. A lot of the sponsors are probably quite annoyed.
I suppose they're certainly having to write lots of different scenarios and different game plans. So it's been a difficult games for them. You know, it wasn't the case that they had maybe two or three playbooks, and that was what was going to, you know, one or two of them were going to be what they played with. So it created quite a lot of headaches for sure in terms of how they're, how they've had to approach it. However, you know, I think, you know, the Olympics is a massive machine. I mean, you know, there's going to be, you know, anywhere up to two-thirds of the world watching the Olympic Games. So as a platform, you know, it trumps everything. It trumps, you know, Champions League football, it trumps the Super Bowl, it trumps, you know, the World Cup. So I think it has, you know, it has certainly been a challenge for them. And I think they've had to change their strategies for how they execute. But I still think that the sponsors are very unlikely to step away. They're going to want to continue to be seen to be supporting, in particular, the athletes, and that they're going to be there for the athletes. And I think, you know, on the far side of the games, assuming all goes well, you know, that if they message properly, if they show that they continue to show their support, you know, that I think they will hopefully come out of it in the positive light that you would expect from a sponsorship.
You mentioned that a lot of them would have had to change their plans. Mm. What do you mean in particular by that? I mean, I look at Toyota, for example. They seem to be getting a lot of coverage around saying that they're going to pull some of their TV ads and that. Now, obviously, they have to cater to a domestic audience.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's one example of a big company that, that seems to have taken a bit of a step back anyway.
Yeah, they've definitely, you know, defined a strategy, which is to, you know, be seen to be reacting and making changes. You know, I suppose what we've seen in particular has been a bit of a surge in terms of how technology has been used through through the activation of lots of different sponsorships. So, you know, you've got the likes of Airbnb who are you know, starting to focus their activations around, you know, linking the athletes with their home crowds and trying to find the connection and a bridge between the two of those. The IOC themselves have been doing quite a bit in terms of trying to, you know, use technology to bridge that gap, because there's going to be nobody in the stadium. So that isn't a platform for anybody to kind of benefit from. It's all about making that link between the TV audience and the people at home. So I think a lot of the strategies that the brands are building are around being a part of that and creating that bridge between home and the athlete. So, you know, you're going to see throughout the Olympics things like, you know, cheer maps where you're sitting down watching it on TV and you're going to be able to actually hit a button and show your support locally for your people at the games. And there's quite a lot of initiatives being developed around, you know, athlete moments where friends and family and friends at selected venues of Olympians that they'll be able to link directly to their family and friends in a special moment around the athlete's occasion.
Look, ma'am, I did it.
Yeah, and I think even in fairness to the local sponsors of the Olympic Federation of Ireland, which is FBD, I mean, they were probably ahead of the curve to some extent in creating an initiative they have called Sound Support, where they've created bespoke tracks for Kelly Harrington and Chloe Watkins. And they're going to have, you know, snippets of recordings from Kelly and Chloe's final training sessions and messages from their friends and family recorded and sent with them out to the game. So I do think some of the brands have hit the nail on the head in recognizing that we need to support the athletes. That's really, you know, fundamentally what the games are all about.
Yeah.
And finding activations that are sensitive and conscious to that, ideally probably through technology, because it's very difficult to do it in a live way. I think they're the ones who are we might see as the winners on the far side.
Yeah, I mean, you've outlined some clever examples there, and there's no doubt it's an industry that's bursting with clever people, and there is a lot of innovation. We've seen that over the last few years for sure, but sometimes it can go too far, and particularly if it's kind of aggressive and in people's face, in the TV viewer's face or whatever, it kind of puts people off, makes them feel negatively about what they're looking at. It kind of loses the sense of authenticity maybe that people want from their sporting events or whatever. So how does one avoid that?
Yeah, and I suppose we had the classic example, I suppose, or the textbook example that will be used in colleges around the world for the next 5 years, which is the Coca-Cola at the Euros. And obviously there was a lot of response and reaction to, you know, the bottles being placed in front of the athletes and then allowing the athletes to be able to push that aside or whatever. But, you know, I suppose, it'll be, you know, there'll be a learning from the Euros, from that experience. And I think there'll be a case where, you know, the activation planners for the next big round of events will be, you know, standing back from that and saying, well, listen, how could we do that better? And how could we do that smartly? Should we be there at all, or should we do it differently? I suppose the underlying fundamental for me is that the public are fans of sponsorship. When we asked the general public in Ireland how they feel about sponsors and sponsorship, and we did it in the eye of the pandemic, and we said, so how do you feel about, you know, companies and brands spending, you know, decent lumps of money on sponsorship given the environment that we're in right now? And in the case of sport and in the case of music and entertainment, and, you know, we're getting 70 to 75% of the country saying, I think that stuff is really good, and continue to do it. And in fact, continue to do more of it if you can. And when you get into the areas around cause, 82% of the public in Ireland are saying, yeah, no, keep going with that stuff. We really support it. So there's no message coming from the public as yet to say, oh, that's a bit in your face. We don't really like that. That's not really the right way for brands to be coming into my space or my passion. So I think until we see a scale of resistance from the public that says, oh my God, that's so off the charts, then I think brands are going to continue to test the lines to see, you know, where is the public switching off, or where are they being turned off? And I guess, you know, like everything in our business, we build everything on what the public tells us. So all our clients, when we, you know, make a call, we'll ask the public how do they feel about stuff. If they say back off, our clients back off. Yeah. If they don't say back off, then clients will continue to do things that are seen to be, you know, bought into or are supported by the public who they're trying to ultimately have a relationship with.
Yeah, it sounds like the Irish sponsors are getting it right. So maybe it's not quite the case in America. Wasn't there some fella who, when he scored a touchdown in American football, he went and took a bite out of the sponsor's pizza in celebration?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know what? It brings a smile. I remember presenting it in a workshop with clients, and, you know, it kind of brought a smile. They said, Jesus, we'd never do that. We'd never go that far. But, you know, I suppose there is that, you know, there's that unique local market, you know, readiness to accept things. Again, sponsorship kind of evolved in North America. I think, you know, it seeded itself there. And, you know, the consumer in North America will have a different appetite for what they're happy for their brands to do and not do. And I suppose that initiative was probably a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek. It's probably the kind of thing that if you know, a tongue-in-cheek brand in Ireland, like a Paddy Power or something, was doing something a little bit fun and edgy, you know, some of the right brands will get away with some of this kind of stuff because it's what their brand stands for and how they operate.
To be honest, I'm smiling here. I haven't seen this clip, but I'm kind of smiling, picturing it. So maybe it was a good idea after all.
Yeah.
Okay, we leave it there. John Traynor, Chief Executive of Onside. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Gavin.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.